ultimately what you realize is that you can't do everything yourself. And I think it's dangerous to try and do everything yourself. And yes, I'm still guilty of micromanaging sometimes, but I think that that's just comes from a closeness. It comes from a fundamental understanding and that gut instinct that only you as a business owner will have. And I think that you get to the point where you understand that you just can't do everything, or that there's something that perhaps you don't know that somebody will know more about, or that somebody can do better to actually help you advance the business.
Do you love your life as a small business owner? Let's be real, sometimes we just don't. It's my hope that this, the My Daily Business podcast, helps you regain a little of that lost love through practical, actionable tips, tools, and tactics, interviews with creative and curious small business owners, and in-depth coaching episodes with me, your host, Fiona Kalacki. With more than 20 years' experience in marketing, brand, content, and systems, and having now helped thousands of small business owners, I know what it takes to build a business that you can be proud of and that actually aligns with your values, your beliefs, and your hopes for the future. So much of our daily life is spent working on and in the businesses and the brands that we are creating. And so it makes sense to actually love what you do. So let's get into this podcast and help you figure out how to love your business and your life on the daily. Hello and welcome to episode 354 of the My Daily Business podcast. Today, you're listening to an interview with a small business owner, and this one is with somebody that many, many, many people will know and at least definitely know the brand, especially if you are here in Australia. And so I can't wait to share that one with you. Before I do, I want to acknowledge the traditional owners and custodians on the land on which I record this podcast, and that is the Wobbarong and Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. And I pay my respects to their elders past and present and acknowledge that sovereignty has never been ceded. I also want to acknowledge that it is a very, very difficult time for First Nations people in this country, especially post-referendum. And if you are First Nations listening to this, please know how much love and support there is for you, even though it may not feel like that, especially with the results of the referendum. And if you are non-First Nations, please know that there are so many ways to keep this momentum going and to support, regardless of how you voted. I think a lot of Australians do want better outcomes for First Nations people. And so look at how you can keep supporting First Nations people, buying, you know, from Black-owned businesses, getting catering from Indigenous and First Nations and Torres Strait Islander companies. We created a list of this for one of our emails recently. If you would like that shared with you, you can just email us, hello@mydailybusiness.com. But there are also so many lists already out there created by First Nations people. So please do a Google search, find some way to keep this going, because we are all responsible for creating an incredible life for every Australian. And also, whether you're in Australia, whether you're outside of Australia, there's so much going on in the world right now that is causing pain and overwhelm and stress and grief and loss to people all over the world. And if you are finding it particularly difficult, please know there is help available. Here in Australia, we have Beyond Blue. You can find so many resources. And if you actually have an ABN, you can get 10 or 6, I can't remember the exact number, but you can get some free mental health coaching through Beyond Blue just by sharing your ABN. And that is particularly for small business owners. It is mental health coaches, not psychologists or psychiatrists. There is also 13 Yarn if you are First Nations and you want to talk to other First Nations people about some of the challenges that you're being faced with at the moment. And of course, there are so many other places for people to reach out to all around the world. So please just do your best to look after yourself and be kind. Just share kindness. There's so much attacking and hate going on all over the world, and particularly through social media. So I know it is a really, really tough time. And please know, I'm just sending everyone a big hug, and just look after yourselves. All right, let's get into today's small business interview. So today it's my absolute pleasure to bring you an interview that I did recently with the wonderful Marnie Godding, who is the co-founder, brand director and creative director of Elk. And she started that business in 2004, so it's almost 20 years old, with her partner and co-founder, Adam. And in today's chat, we talk about how the business started, when did it evolve, how did she know when to hire her first staff member, and then how the business has grown and how they've really created this incredible purpose-led business that stands by its values and, even when that is the harder option, really lives up to being a sustainable, ethical business in a fashion retail landscape. We also talk about how the business has grown over time and also how Marnie and Adam have created a culture that is still there even when people work remotely. We also talk about the small steps that other businesses can take if they're really looking to live up to their purpose, align with their values, and create a sustainable, ethical practice, as well as just what it's been like to go through COVID as both a wholesale and retail business. And then how do you create this incredible culture where people want to keep coming to work and they're invested in your brand vision just as much as you are. So there's so much that we unpack here. I just want to say a massive thank you to Marnie because we have only had this happen one other time in 350 episodes, but Marnie and I were actually halfway through our conversation when I realized we were not recording. So poor Marnie had to go right back to the start and record again. And I just want to say absolute thank you for her patience. I know she's a very busy woman and gave up her time to do this. So here it is, my interview with the one wonderful, really inspiring Marnie Godding of Elk. Hello, Marnie. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Fiona.
Oh, I'm really looking forward to this chat. And so how are you feeling about life right now? I like to start with this question.
Yeah, we're feeling really positive. It's a really, really busy time for us. We're feeling somewhat overwhelmed at all of the great things and challenges that are also conversely thrown at us. But things are good and we've got really big plans. We've got long to-do lists, but I think we've been doing this long enough to know that we've got to remain focused and we're not trying to do too much. It's particularly tough at the moment, I think, out there in the world of retail and particularly in fashion. It's a bit of a battleground at the moment.
Yes. And so you mentioned that you've been doing this a decent amount of time and you have. And so many people who listen to this podcast will be very familiar with Elk and with your business and your brand and probably own parts of pieces from it. Can you share what is Elk and the origin story of why you and your partner, Adam, created it?
Sure. Elk is coming up to nearly 20 years in business now, which is exciting. And it was started in 2004, probably a little earlier than that, but officially in 2004 by myself and my now husband, Adam. And we met very young and had always had the idea, having come from entrepreneurial and small business backgrounds in our families, that we wanted to work together. And Adam is a fine jeweler by trade. And I also was working in marketing and events prior to us commencing the business. And I think that we had this really nice way of complementing each other's skills. And he's very technical. He's also very creative, but he's very technical and he's very, very good with finance and numbers. And I've got the more probably creative and visionary side that together, you know, was a good match. And I think that we really wanted to work together straight away. But my dad and his sage advice really encouraged us to go and do our own thing for a little while before we jumped in and worked together. And I think that was good advice because we definitely made mistakes on other people's time and we definitely had some life experience that we were able to then bring to the business. But Adam was making fine jewelry for a very loyal but very infrequent customer base that didn't need to come in very often to see him. So I think I saw an opportunity pretty quickly that existed for him to create a more lower price product to encourage his customers to come back more frequently. We also had a lot of friends in the fashion industry at the time. And so I think that we realized that there was a niche in the market for a more price pointed, still handmade, but price pointed contemporary type of jewelry item. And we started experimenting. I taught myself how to silversmith. We found, you know, through friends, opportunities to create collections for their runways. And really very quickly, you know, the pieces that we were making started to get noticed and we were selling them through his small shop front. But we had others asking us for that product. And I think it's important to remember that that was a very, very different time, you know, for some of the people listening to this podcast, understanding that it was a time pre-internet is something that's probably quite hard to imagine.
Yes.
But the way that we started really was through, you know, this product was being noticed by people in stores and by other fashion labels. And there wasn't a lot of choice out at that time. And so I think they were asking us where they could buy this product. And, you know, whatever we made, we sold. We just couldn't keep up with demand. And I think that, you know, that has seen the collection evolve from what was purely jewelry into other accessories and then into a fully fledged fashion range, which has been running now for about 13 years. So that's a 20-year history and a very small snapshot.
It is. And so Was Adam's business already called Elk, or did you come up with that name together?
No, it wasn't trading as Elk. I think that we needed to create a different name because it was going to be and started to morph into a very different business to what it was previously. He was custom making everything himself and it was just him, really. And this business was about more. And I think we sat down and really thought about, you know, what this business could be. And we realized we needed a name that was not connected to a particular person. And Elk was born out of a idea of creating a brand that was central to a very strong natural figure or, you know, being. And we've also got quite strong ties to Canada and to Scandinavia through our family history. And we wanted a name that was also unisex because we didn't really know where the brand was going to head, what sort of product we were going to make, but something that had no ethnicity attached to it, that was, you know, strong, short, easy to say. But I think in hindsight, you know, again, 20 years before the internet really is what it is today, you know, trademarking a name like that was quite, in hindsight, it wasn't a great idea because it was very, very difficult to get those trademarks through. But, you know, knowing what we know now, we would probably play it very differently. But we're at after a bit of hard work. And I think the branding really does suit the business that we've created.
Yeah. And I think it's almost like when people name their children, you don't really know what it's, you don't know what the child's going to be like. I mean, you name them usually 2 seconds after you've met them or before you've even met them. And so I feel like it's also a brand can become whatever the name, you know, it can become, it's like Apple computers. You wouldn't have thought Apple and computers or mustard and lockers, like a brand can grow into its name as well and become like it's such, I couldn't imagine it being called anything else but Elk now.
No, that's right. And I think the brand is more than just what the name is. Like you have to represent so much more than those three letters.
Totally. And so you mentioned that the business has been around for 20 plus years, which is gigantic. And I totally understand where you're coming from when you were saying it's pre-internet, pre-social media. I used to work at fashion magazines then, and it's a very, very different time when the media, you know, journalism and media people had a lot of sway, more so than, you know, they maybe do now. But because of that, you have gone through the global financial crisis, you've gone through other things, and more recently, COVID-19 and the pandemic. As a retail and wholesale business, how did you deal with the pandemic and what were sort of the lessons that came out of that for your business?
I think that the biggest thing that came out of that was this understanding that we've got a very fundamentally strong business. We are still owner-led and we're completely self-funded. And I think that, you know, we are very proud of the fact that whatever life throws at us and whatever business throws at us, we're able to ride that through. So in that, you know, in the 20 years that we've been around, we've gone through the global financial crisis and then more recently the pandemic. Really, we're not big risk takers. And I think that that has sometimes slowed us up, but it's certainly given us a very, very strong foundation to always fall back on. We're very close to our business. We are very good at forecasting and seeing what's coming up, being blindsided by big things like a pandemic or even small things like, you know, interest rate hikes. You have to, when you're running a good business, always have your eyes open and your ears open, and you have to be making sure that you take the time to actually step back and watch what's going on. So, you know, we've got 80 to 90 employees now, and that's a lot of people to manage, and it's a lot of people to also keep on the straight and narrow. And having a very clear vision and having very fundamentally strong business practices and principles is a great combination for making sure that you've got a very strong future.
Yeah. And so speaking on that and staying on employees, what was the first or who was the first employee that you took on, especially being partners? I'm imagining that that might have been a bit of a conversation of like, oh, are we there yet? Do we really want to take some of the money we're making and put it onto somebody else? There's lots of people listening, I know, that will be in that stage where they're either, you know, trying to get into the US and so they need somebody over in the US to be working for them, or they're trying to just hire their very first staff member. What was it like and who did you hire?
Our first hire was an apprentice jeweler. And that was pretty quickly after we started working together. Then after that first hire, we then brought on a salesperson. And then from the salesperson, there was an accounts person and so on, so on, so on. Whatever stage in business you're at, I think despite wearing multiple hats that you never really ever take off, I still put out the bins and I still, you know, clean the kitchen and feed the worms and do all that sort of stuff. ultimately what you realize is that you can't do everything yourself. And I think it's dangerous to try and do everything yourself. And yes, I'm still guilty of micromanaging sometimes, but I think that that's just comes from a closeness. It comes from a fundamental understanding and that gut instinct that only you as a business owner will have. And I think that you get to the point where you understand that you just can't do everything, or that there's something that perhaps you don't know that somebody will know more about, or that somebody can do better to actually help you advance the business. Bringing people on is a big commitment. It's a commitment to you financially, but it's a commitment to them as well. Personally, they've committed to working for you and you're responsible for that person whilst they are. Having a business plan in place and understanding what benefit that person brings to the business is critical. So I am in this really beautiful position where anybody that comes to our business, I learn from. And I love that. You never stop learning. You never know everything because things change as well. So whilst you might need to know more about accounting or you might need to know more about HR, there's that fundamental understanding that comes with running a good business, but also there's the world changes and the market changes and business expectation changes and even, you know, compliance changes. And so you have to always bring people into the business that are going to extend you or going to help you learn or be a stronger business. So making the right hire at the right time can be a huge step forward for a business, but certainly bringing people on that are going to hold you back, you know, that's probably what has been our biggest challenge over the years, is actually having people who make our life harder.
Oh my goodness. And employees, I mean, it can be hard, whatever position you're in and whether you run a business or not, just dealing with employees. I remember when I became head of marketing for a big accessories company, somebody said to me, it's 5% head of marketing, 95% head of HR, because all you're going to deal with is people's problems all day long. But outside of that, coming back to, you know, you've got great staff. In terms of the pandemic, a lot of businesses have gone through, you know, changes with their staff, in particular, you know, staff not necessarily wanting to come back to work full time in an office or come back as much as maybe they were working. You've got retail shops, so obviously those people have to turn up and open the retail shops and be there. But in terms of head office staff, how have you dealt with the change to people's lifestyle and wanting to support that, as well as continue having this great connection and this great community that you have, you know, more so when people are actually physically in the same spot?
I think we're running a business in a way that we could never have imagined pre-pandemic. And I think that that's not a bad thing. You know, we've got a very strong culture at Elk. And I think that we've always talked about flexibility and we've talked about balance and about aligning your values with your workplace. And, you know, pre-pandemic, we had a lot of people coming to us and saying that they wanted to work with a brand that displayed its values quite publicly and that was transparent about the way that they function. And this was really a proving ground for us. So it was really tough. It was a very tough time. And I think that during that critical period where everybody completely had to shut down, there was nothing anybody could do. There was zero option on trying to get around it. And we didn't want to get around it because we really were just focused on surviving it. In our business, we have part of our function is obviously distribution. And so our warehouse was deemed as a critical component to keep working, which allowed us in some part to keep the wheels rolling and certainly allowed us to fulfill wholesale orders and also online orders as well. So that was pretty great because there was a lot of businesses who didn't have any option. And then for our design team and our administration side of the team, we just had to adapt. And the team were incredible. They really did just show the most incredible loyalty. They exhibited the most incredible tenacity, and also, you know, for all of us, it was a very vulnerable time. And I think that what we did was we tried to maintain positivity. We tried to stay fundamentally strong for them because we wanted them to understand that, you know, we are a business that's weathered things like this before, that we weren't going away, that we weren't going to lose the business, because I think people went straight to, you know, the responsibilities that they have. How am I going to survive? How am I going to pay the mortgage? How am I going to, you know, pay the school fees? Whatever it was, we needed them to be understanding that Elk was not going to go anywhere. And so communication was critical through that period. We set up an internal newsletter that we would put out each week, just, you know, checking in, telling funny stories, telling people where we're at, how we're feeling, how we're tracking, any updates that they needed to know. So that time really just proved to us that how critical communication is within a business, and how that what we feel or we understand is not necessarily what, you know, one of our staff or suppliers even or customers even understood about, you know, how we were feeling as well.
Yeah, amazing. And so there's so much in that. And so on that as well, like outside of the pandemic, you mentioned before being 20 years old, which is incredible and huge, and you should be so, so proud of that. But that also is that you've weathered so many storms already, like the global financial crisis. How have you got through these? I mean, you've just talked about some really practical things that you did during the pandemic with the newsletter, but on a, I guess, mental, you know, emotional level as the leader of a business, how have you managed these dips? You mentioned before that you're not very risk, you know, you don't take that many risks, which I think is wonderful, I have to say, to hear, because so often in business, it's like, take risks, be bigger, do huge. And then these people come crashing down sometimes. So how have you managed to get through the other challenges pre-pandemic? And what would you say to someone who's listening, who's maybe in that exact headspace right now, given everything they're hearing in the media about the recession? Does that even make sense as a question?
It does. And it's complex. And I think that, you know, the realities of how we run business today are really, it's all relative. So we still, you know, for anybody new listening to this podcast who might have a business that's a year old or might not have even started a business, we will all face the same challenges. The challenges around capacity, your capacity to be able to cope with business as usual, and then the capacity or the, you know, the space to be able to deal with things that might come at you, which will come at you, that you don't expect, and what support mechanisms you have around you. We are, by good fortune, but also good engineering, surrounded by people who can provide us with advice and support. And, you know, when we do wobble, people who can set us back on the straight and narrow. You know, it's tough though, where whatever stage the business is at, whether you're a business of one or you're 100 or 1,000, you know, a challenge is a challenge and you have to learn how to get through it. And I think that you have to really focus on where the biggest impact lays and where the biggest influence that your decisions will sit. It's challenging when you run your own business, unless you're starting it when you're 60 and you've got a life of experience behind you. You can't know everything. And I think the other part of providing yourself with a good safety network around you is actually looking at the people that you bring into the business. So we could not categorically have got through that pandemic without our head of HR. We didn't have a head of HR for very long before she joined the business. And I look back now and think it was a real mess. And it was a messy time because nobody had any answers. And she didn't have the answers either. But what she did do was able to help us navigate, which was a very complex system of government regulation and requirement and being eligible for grants or whatever it was, or subsidies at the time. You know, you need people around you to help you navigate that stuff because you drown otherwise. And, you know, keeping your head above the water is as a survival instinct, but actually pushing yourself forward and making yourself stronger from these challenges is only something that instinctively you can do as a business owner.
And so I'm just going to ask another question on that. Do you have any practices or, you know, like I will go for a walk. I'm lucky to live in a very bushy area of Melbourne. And I started really in the pandemic going for a walk to get out of the house because I had a 6-month-old and a child, at, you know, doing homeschooling. My husband had to work full time from home and I was trying to run the business. And that walk, that morning walk was just like, get me out of the house, get me out of the craziness. And that is something that I've kept doing. And it's, you know, 3 or 4 years now, and I will do it as long as I can for the rest of my life because of the mental health and physical health. But it's more mental, I think, just getting out in the morning, getting some fresh air. I feel like I can cope with stuff better. Are there any practical things that you or Adam or anyone else sort of senior in the job, in the company, do that you think has helped with tackling all of those challenges that do inevitably hit any business owner?
The biggest change, I think, for the business is the way that we work now. So, you know, coming out of that pandemic period, most people loved the balance of being able to have some time of working from home. Mm-hmm. And that is something that we've continued to offer as a measure of flexibility for everybody in the business that's not, you know, it's not critical, like retail, to turn up, you know, or the warehouse, for example. And even, you know, now today, whilst we're still navigating how to have people come back and work from home at the same time, that is something that I think as a, it's not a ritual, perhaps a company policy that's been put in place to offer people a bit of balance. Personally, yes, oh my gosh, so many things that I think that we realised that we needed to put in place to actually cope mentally. Same thing, we've got two kids, we're a husband and wife that work together and live together, and COVID was really challenging. And I think that as a business owner, the other big thing was that sense of responsibility that we had for those 80 to 90 people. You know, we they looked to us for answers that we didn't have, and they looked for us for guidance and for strength that sometimes we didn't have. And I think coming out of, you know, that whole period of time, what Adam and I have done is we've actually made the biggest life decision, and we've actually moved down the coast. So we've taken our kids out of school. We have transitioned our roles differently to allow that to happen, and our team has facilitated that happening as well. We had a personal tragedy at the start of the year that really compounded the choice that we've made for our own mental health to be down, living where we are, and we commit to driving a horrific number of hours every week to come back to the office because we still need to show up. We still need to be present. We still need to lead the business. We still need to be there as fallbacks or as, you know, people to guide and make decisions. But we have also, we are also demonstrating by real practice that finding balance in life is really, really important. And, you know, right now things are really busy. We're growing as a brand. We've got new retail stores coming. You know, it's a really, really hectic time for us, but we're still trying to demonstrate that having flexibility in your work life makes you a better person, a better parent, a better leader, a better manager, whatever it is. You have to take time to step aside and breathe because you panic otherwise.
Oh my God. I'm sorry that you went through a tragedy. We moved out to where I live in North Warrandyte 8 or 9 years ago now. And I have to say that nature is such a healer of all sorts of things that you may be, you know, going on. So, and good on you for being the leaders and showing that that's possible as well, because there's so many people looking at you and then saying, oh, okay, it is actually possible. I could have the lifestyle I want, plus the kind of business that I want as well. And so you've mentioned that you have exciting news and that you're opening new retail, but you do wholesale and retail. There's actually some lovely stores near me that sell a lot of elk. And so which systems or what have you had to create in order to run a successful B2B business and a B2C business? The marketing, the communications. I know some businesses have got, you know, like a secret or private Instagram channel, for example, for their wholesalers, or they have different messages that need to go out to wholesale and retail. So how do you do that in terms of keeping it consistent, but also understanding that they're two separate markets?
Well, I think technology and systems, you can look at through a few different lenses. And one is through efficiency. So we've obviously got a business that requires systems to allow us to freight our goods, to make our sales, to put orders in, you know, like it's a very, you know, simplistic way of looking at it. Lens to look at it through is through customer experience. So our customers are not only our retail customers, which we source online and through retail, but they are wholesale customers as well, which are both domestic and international. But they're also, we are also our own customers as well. Our staff are some of the best feedback or the best representation we have of, you know, what they like and what they don't like. And we have to find a way of dealing, or not dealing with, but with communicating with them as well. So there's systems that are required there. And then I think for us in the business that we have created, the other lens to look at things through is through sustainability. So we've got different systems that we need to measure our impact and measure our carbon footprint, for example. So there's a complex web of systems that's required. And I think in some senses, the systems that we were using that were best in practice, you know, even 2 or 3 years ago, as innovation and technology advances, that those systems are redundant today. So in some ways, we're actually a little bit old fashioned. We still run agents, we've got showrooms and we run showings. But we're not totally digital, because we still want those connections with our customers, and they need to see us and feel the fabrics, and we need, you know, we get the best sense of how our wholesale customers particularly are tracking through actually one-on-one contact. But, you know, one of our greatest successes from a wholesale point of view is that we're known, and we've got quite good regional coverage, as you suggested before, that in your area there's some stores that have our product in them. And that tyranny of distance sometimes means that, you know, people can't always get to see us. And so we've set up a system with a company called New Order, and that's effectively given us a 24-hour selling tool. And store owners, you know, one of the things that's come out of the pandemic, interestingly, actually, is that wholesale business owners are busier than ever. So they can't necessarily find staff, but they also can't find the time, because they don't have the staff, to go through that traditional buying process that they used to. So we set this tool up for them, and thank God we had it, because through the pandemic it was invaluable, where we couldn't see our customers, or they couldn't get out to showings, or they didn't have time, that they could actually place their orders as frequently or as infrequently as wanted it, you know, 1 o'clock in the afternoon or 1 o'clock in the morning, it didn't really matter. So that was a very critical B2C tool that we had in place. From a B2B point of view, one of the best tools that we've put in place is one called Zendesk. And it's a way for customers to connect with us regardless of the platform or the channel that they're coming through. So, you know, we've got many, many touch points for our customers to contact us, whether it's email or through our social media or even via phone. And so all of this communication channels through to one system. And it has been the best way for us to manage communication with our customers, and for our customer service team to have a holistic view of either sentiment or, you know, trends or patterns that are coming through. So those two tools have been critical to our success through that period and ongoing as well. But, you know, it's important to realize that technology can be redundant, you know, pretty quickly. And I think in some ways we're hamstrung by some of the old systems, and particularly custom built systems that we've had for years, where we can't change, or we can't pivot, or we actually can't retire that system easily, because it's been so entangled in our custom built processes that it's not best in practice anymore. And that's really critical to not saddle yourself to something that you can't get out of.
Oh, so important, that last point, especially even just, we've just changed our brand name recently, well, in April, and there are so many just links and things out there that it's like, oh gosh, this, you just don't even realize sometimes how embedded certain things are until you want to go and change them, for example. And I love that you mentioned New Order. That is a full circle moment, because my bosses at the fashion magazines were the guys who've come up with New Order. So they developed that program. So really interesting. And so you mentioned before transparency is a big part of your business, and you were talking about sustainability and having that sustainable lens when you're looking at your systems. You're aligned as a business to 1% for the planet. So I wanted to ask, when did that come about, and also how much work it has been to be in the kind of 1% for the planet sort of alignment? Because I know that a lot of people want to be B Corp certified, or they want to, you know, go down the path of 1% for the planet or do something else like that. And often they're put off by how much work is involved and how much kind of auditing and paperwork and, you know, or non-paperwork, I guess, that they have to do. How did you get involved with that? And can you talk us through your experience and any advice that you'd have for somebody listening?
Yeah, sure. Working out what's important to you is critical, because that will drive any decisions that you make. What is the purpose of you running your business? You know, in our case, we are a fashion business. We have a huge amount of environmental impact, which we are increasingly aware of. And what is important to us is the transition that we're going through, that we have been going through for probably 10 years now, about our core purpose is to run a better business and make better product to decrease our impact on the planet. Now, that's what's important to us. And that's what I was saying before about working out what's important to you, because that will drive the decisions. Now, all of this work that we're going through in the field of transparency or ethical and sustainable practices is something that's being driven by Adam and myself. And so we were already doing and already living out those principles that we've translated to the business. And when you're looking at, you know, what you do with that, it's really important to kind of try and navigate, you know, how much work something is going to take and what's important and what's valuable. So underpinning all of this is no marketing messages really. It's more about Adam and I just saying what's important to us and how do we reduce the impact that we have on the environment by the business that we're running. And we could ignore that impact. We could continue on the path that we've been on for 20 years and just continue to run a lineal fashion system where we, you know, we take and we make and we discard. But that's not what we're about. We've acknowledged early on and probably a lot earlier than most other brands that's not sustainable. It's not something that the environment of the world can actually sustain from a resource point of view for future generations. And so we're basically putting our money where our mouth is. And having a lot of that work already underway is what we needed to fulfill the commitments that we have. And so joining these external parties like 1% for the Planet, and we are very, very close to submitting our B Corp application, was really a way for us to just formalize that existing work. And, you know, we also we're on the eve of actually launching our fifth transparency report. And we generate most of those reports ourselves in-house, and we also self-assess. And so for us, we wanted to find a way that we could prove that we're effectively following our own commitments and walking the talk. And, you know, we're essentially making ourselves accountable. 1% of the Planet actually isn't a lot of work. It's just a commitment that you make, and it's an accounting process effectively. And so we were actually contributing 1%, if not more, already. But what we were doing was making sure that those funds were being channeled through to organisations with an environmental cause. Now, that was a really tricky time for us because we actually had a very long-standing relationship with UNICEF, and we were very proud of the work that we'd done with them, and we were a platinum champion for children. And, you know, there was a very long-standing existing relationship there that we needed to move away from because UNICEF didn't have an environmental focus. Now, what's important is that 1% for the Planet actually have a list of pre-approved organisations that have environmental causes. You know, that's the centre of the charity work that they're doing, or the work that the NGOs are doing. And so UNICEF, we spoke to them and actually found a way of working with them continuously by finding a purpose that fit into that environmental bucket. Yeah, so I think that whilst 1% for the Planet isn't a huge amount of work, I think something like B Corp is. It's particularly for a business like ours, it's increasingly complex because we've got supply chain that's dotted all over the world. We've got product and raw materials right down to our tier four supply chain that is in some of the most remote parts of the world. And so making sure that we can submit to B Corp and be very rigid with our process is something that we find difficult to resource ourselves. And certainly for small businesses, you can get a consultant in to help you, and or you can actually put a resource into your business. And in our case, we did both. So when we started on this journey of transitioning from a traditional fashion business into the business that we are today, I was doing it on my own and realized pretty quickly that, you know, I couldn't do everything. And also at the time that we were really starting to shift away from conventional materials, conventional manufacturing, it was a time when this topic of sustainability, particularly in the fashion space, was pretty new. We realized that there was not a lot of resources out there. There wasn't a lot of information. The information that we were finding was conflicting. And I was trying to do all of this at the same time as running the business as a growing business as usual and having a family and doing all the other things, you know, try and jam in your
all
your
the things. Yep.
Yeah. And so I brought somebody in, Adam and I brought somebody into the business, and Erica Martin, she was one of the best people that we've ever brought in. And I think that she helped us to focus our attention and to realize that we can't achieve everything and that we needed to focus our energies on the areas that were going to have the greatest impact. So the point of all of this really is that you need to decide what's important to you. You need to decide where you're going to spend your time, and you need to understand how much time that's going to take. Because if you can't give something your all, then is it worth actually doing it all? And if you can't do it all, then you need to bring somebody else in to help you. And I think that, you know, today the market's very different and there's people out there that can help you do that, whereas 8 to 10 years ago, sustainability experts didn't exist. You know, it was a very, very different time.
Totally. It's really great that you've gone into detail about that, because I think a lot of people don't know the difference, or, you know, maybe have heard about the B Corp, the effort, and then thinking, oh, well, I won't touch anything. So it's really good that you've differentiated them, but also that, you know, like you say, if you can't give it everything, maybe look at other things you can do. And also the idea of keeping accountable to your vision. You've mentioned a few times, you know, your vision, and obviously that's a big part of it and a big part of any business. Can I ask you, and I know we haven't got much time left and you're a busy person, but how do you show that to staff? Like, how do you make that vision a reality for people outside of just when they've just started the business and they're onboarding and maybe learning a bit more about the brand? How is that brought up on a practical level throughout people's time at the business?
It's something that I think that for all stakeholders, it has to be something that they understand. And when I speak of stakeholders, I talk about internal team, I talk about our supply chain, talk about anybody that comes through our business. So whether it's our customers or our PR agency or whoever it is, they have to understand why this business exists. Now, they know what we do. We make fashion. Yeah. What they need to understand is what sits behind that and why we make fashion and why we make the fashion that we do. Now, we are very, very transparent just on a daily basis through the way that we behave and the way that we talk, but also through our reports, that we don't have everything completely figured out. Yeah. We're not trying to say we're something that we're not. But driving this business of fashion that we run is a set of values that sit in and around wanting to do things better, wanting to offer a better alternative for customers when they do come to us, offering a solution that is more circular. So having our team come to us is, even when we put our job advertisements out, we're very clear about who we are. We're very clear about what our purpose is and what our vision is. And so why would you work for us? You know that before you even come to us. Mm-hmm. That's reiterated then through the recruitment process and then through the induction process and then through continual reminders as well. So we have an annual conference where we go back through and talk about our values, and one of those values is authenticity. And we really try always then to bring people into the business who also can demonstrate those values as well. So anybody who will then be responsible for training somebody else or for imparting knowledge or imparting training will also fundamentally hold those values as important. And Adam and I have to continually demonstrate that. Now, as founders, we don't need to do any of this. We don't need to sprout values. We don't need to push sustainability. It's expensive. It's complicated. It's frustrating, but it's essential. And we have made that essential to the business. We've made that essential to ourselves, and we've made it a non-negotiable. So we say continually that every decision has to have sustainability at the front of it. And for some staff who've been with us for a long time, or some staff who've come through from traditional fashion businesses, that's a real change of mindset. Mm-hmm. But we don't compromise on that. We don't, you know, and there's times that we want to. There's times where we're really, really challenged. And, you know, we look now at our price points, and, you know, that's something that critical to anybody who's starting a business is not only looking at those core factors of how much does it cost to make it, how much does it cost to ship it, how much does it cost to market it. You know, what is that factor in there that you're going to allow for sustainability? Because it costs more. It is undeniable. The materials cost more. The marketing costs more. You know, if you're going to contribute to 1% of the planet, that's another 1% that you've got to add in. And I think that we really, as business owners and as founders, we still make that important. We say we want to compromise, but you know what? If that dress that you bought for 125 last week is going to be 145 next week, but actually it's made out of something that's far less impactful, or that it's made in a factory that's got ethical conditions, then isn't that worth paying for? Mm. But underlying all of that is the customer. The customer has to see importance in that. They have to see relevance in that work. And it's a challenge because, particularly at the moment, times are pretty tough. People are really, really stretched. And that's us needing to really balance out that messaging of going, buy our product because it's better, but don't buy it if you don't need it. Mm. We really don't want to force consumption. We don't want to say to you, you have to have something that actually you don't need in your life. So it's this constant state of balance. I mean, isn't that life? Like, it's trying to work out balance between work life and play life, or whatever you call it, you know, between price point and ethics, between consumption and responsible consumerism. It's just, you know, it's constant balancing that you're trying to find.
Yeah, and I think it's so good that you're being so transparent and open about it, and also that people can see that a brand like yours can survive and there is a market for it. Whenever I've worked with clients on this particular question, you know, people often think, well, I just have to, you know, I have to panic, especially in this current economic climate, and I have to just slash things and maybe not hold up to my values as much as I want to. And it's like, that is going to cause long-term regret, you know, for a very short-term potential gain that may not even be there. Whereas I do think that there is always an audience that wants to, you know, buy the $145 dress and maybe buy less of something else that they were going to buy that year in order to afford that price increase because they believe in what you're doing. And so I imagine that you'd have a lot and a long list for from 20 years, but what are you most proud of from your journey with Elk so far?
I think the thing I'm most proud of is the awareness that the journey that we've been on and the research that we've done has had on our team and right through the supply chain as well. So, you know, in some cases we've seen suppliers who have been working the same way for generations who've actually now seen they've actually undertaken and committed to a real shift in understanding and committing to improve their processes or the materials that they procure or giving us a look into, from a transparency point of view, giving us a look into their supply chain that previously they held really guarded. That's a positive influence and a legacy, I suppose, that we're the most proud of. We had a staff member who left us recently and they said to us that when they came to us, they knew that the journey that we were on was to be a more sustainable fashion brand. And they've left with so much knowledge that they didn't have when they came with us, not from a technical point of view necessarily, but certainly with that understanding of the environmental impact of the industry that we're working in. And they're now going to take that to their next job in a business that has zero acknowledgement of impact. And that is the work that we're trying to do. We're not saying that we're best. We're not saying we've got everything figured out. But what we are doing is trying to show that this is the playbook. If you're going to transition or you're a new business who wants to start with sustainability as part of your DNA, then this is how you do it. And yes, we're still figuring things out. And yes, the industry's in transition, business itself and, you know, society's in transition as well. But right now, this is the best way that we can figure out how to do it. And we're going to share the journey in the hope that somebody takes something from that. And that they then impart that on their friends or their family or the next job that they go to, or that then they come full circle and come back to us with more knowledge. You know, this is a really crucial time for us to do better, to know more, and to really commit financially and personally to doing better, because the clock is ticking, you know, the environment is not keeping up. And, you know, I question every day whether or not what we're doing can actually ever be sustainable. And I don't think it ever can really be. But what we need to do is show better ways and be that better option for people when they do get to that point of actually buying something, that it's a better option than what they could have bought previously. And there'll be a better option again tomorrow, but we're just working forwards, always working forwards.
Ooh. Oh my goodness. You've shared so much today. Thank you so much. And what is next for Elk and where can people connect with you? I know we'll link to your transparency report in the show notes as well as your, you know, social media and everything else. But what's next for Elk?
Well, I think further connections are the key for us, really. So we, as I mentioned before, expanding fairly slowly, but expanding our presence in retail. We've got one of our stores in renovation at the moment and another big one due to be renovated soon. It'd be nice to be able to expand wholesale back out into international. We had such a huge spread globally pre-pandemic that we've pretty much entirely lost. So we're really keen to get stuck back into representing Australian fashion, sustainable Australian fashion internationally. I think that's a really exciting time. One of our core pillars is community. So I think that we're really looking forward to, you know, driving deeper connections in communities that where we trade. Because it's, you know, it's more than just about selling product. And I think that we've got some of our retail stores in some really lovely areas and our wholesalers also work in some great areas. And, you know, it's all about supporting each other and at the end of the day, supporting the customers that support us.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Marnie. And congratulations on 20 years. That's gigantic. And on all of the work that you're doing in the sustainability space. It's really admirable. And I think will be contagious for people listening, being like, okay, I'm going to start. Even if it's a small step, I'm going to start. So thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Bye.
Oh, just a massive thank you again to Marnie for so many tips and insights, from her understanding about marketing and coming up with the brand name through to everything around transparency. And on that note, if you are interested in checking out the transparency report from Elk, we will link to that in the show notes. You can also just Google Elk, the label, transparency, and you should get through to their transparency page, which goes through everything about caring and repairing for their product, plus what they're doing with 1% for the planet, plus their transparency report. So as I said, we will link to that in the show notes. You can also connect with Elk and with Marnie herself via their social media, and you can find them on Instagram at Elk the Label, all one word, ELKTHELABEL, and you can also find them online at elkthelabel.com. We'll link to those in the show notes. But I would love to know what you took away from this. And you can always send us an email, hello@mydailybusiness.com, or find us on Instagram @mydailybusiness_ or TikTok @mydailybusiness. But I just want to highlight two of the things that really stood out to me from my chat with Marnie Godding of Elk. The first is when she talked about viewing everything with the lens of sustainability. I think so often in business, we are just viewing everything through the lens of financial success, and that's it. So many times people will say, how's your business going? And, you know, people will either respond, well, because we are up X amount of percentage or X amount of dollars year on year or month on month, or we've had our best year ever, or, oh no, it's not going so well, our sales are down. And we only look at the business through that lens rather than, you know, choosing a lens like sustainability. Okay, regardless of how the sales are going, what else are we trying to achieve with this business? And then when we look at it from that standpoint, how are we doing? And I also like that she was talking about even the metrics for success that were great a couple of years ago have changed and adapted, and we need to change and adapt as those things change in terms of how we view sustainability and what are we doing to really genuinely show up as a sustainable business. So I absolutely loved just that concept of looking at the business through a different lens than so often people do look at it, which is predominantly financial. The other thing that really stood out to me, I mean, there were so many things, but the other thing that really stood out is when Marnie talked about extending yourself and growing the business by bringing on people who know more than you in a certain area. And I feel like that can be such a hard thing for people to get their heads around, especially if you've just built the business yourself and maybe you've had like Marnie, you're working with your partner or you've got a sister or a cousin or somebody else in the business. It can be hard to not think, well, we can manage it, or really, do we want to spend the money on that when we could spend it on, I don't know, SEO or doing more meta ads or something else. It can be really difficult to go, you know what, I'm not an expert in this area and I need to bring in somebody who can help us achieve a level of greatness in that particular part of the business, because we just don't have the skills. And even if you maybe do have the skills, even it's sometimes like, do I want to spend my time? Is my time best spent doing that thing? So for example, I love playing around in Canva. I absolutely love it. I feel like I should have been a graphic designer in another life. I know there's lots of graphic designers being like, Canva is not graphic design. Don't try and put those things together. But I love doing that sort of creative stuff. I love just sort of spending time just like messing about. However, that's not the best use of my time. And so all of our graphics for social media are created by my OBM, Erica. And we have other graphics that are created, like slide decks and course coaching materials, by another person that we work with. And then we had Ashley Simonetto, who created, you know, the actual brand guidelines, and often is the person I go to if we're going to change things or change, you know, how our Instagram looks or TikTok covers or whatever. And so it can be hard to be like, I enjoy doing that, and maybe I've got some little bit of a skill in it, but other people have a better skill. And it's better for me to outsource that or to bring somebody into the business who's going to be incredible at it versus me faffing about or trying to have a little bit of fun for a couple of hours when I could be better utilized in the business to grow it. And so that can be a hard thing to get your head around. And I really like that she said it's about extending and growing, and how can we do that with the help of other people? So I hope that's really useful for you, especially if you're in that stage where you're like, I'm going to hire, you know, my first person, or I'm going to get somebody that I'm going to outsource certain things to. And I know that it can be very difficult, especially when you're parting with money and you think, oh, really? Can we afford it? I often think you do need to hire somebody just before you think you can afford it, because if you're waiting until everything is perfect, then potentially you're waiting too long and you're spreading yourself too thin. So I really think there's so much to take away from Marnie's chat. As I said, again, we will link to the transparency report that Marnie references. And just want to say a massive congratulations to Marnie and Adam and the whole team at Elk for sticking around. I mean, 20 years is gigantic, particularly for a fashion and retail business, and particularly for one that is trying to align themselves and doing so with great success, I might add, to being genuinely ethical and sustainable. So we will link to Elk, the label, in our show notes. You'll be able to find them, as I said before, on Instagram, just under Elk, the label. You can also find them online, elkthelabel.com. And we'll link to all of that in the show notes, which you'll be able to find over at mydailybusiness.com/podcast/354. Thank you again so much, Marnie, for coming on and sharing all your wisdom and doing so twice because of my recording issues. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And if you found this useful, please share it with a friend. It just can help us really spread the messages and the insights and the wisdom that our guests are sharing. Thank you so much, and I'll see you next time. Bye. Thanks for listening to the My Daily Business podcast. For a range of tools to help you grow and start your business, including coaching programs, courses, and templates, check out our shop at mydailybusiness.com/shop. And if you want to get in touch, you can do that via email, hello@mydailybusiness.com, or you can hit us up on Instagram @mydailybusiness_. You can find us on TikTok @mydailybusiness, or find me, Fiona Clarkey, on LinkedIn. I look forward to connecting.